Midday Cafe is brought to you by Worldwide MTC Studios and the following sponsors. Skype Meeting Broadcast. Skype Meeting Broadcast is a new component of Skype for Business. As part of Office 365 and Skype for Business Online, Skype Meeting Broadcast lets you produce, host, and broadcast meetings to large online audiences, up to 10,000. And it's how we broadcast Midday Cafe. TriCaster by NewTek. TriCaster is the most complete multi-camera production and media publishing solution for creating visually stunning programs for live streaming, online video, projection, post-production, broadcast, and social media. TriCaster is how we premix and deliver our shows on Midday Cafe. Magwell USB Capture SDI. Convert pre-mixed audio-video content from SDI to HDMI to a USB 3.0 Skype Meeting Broadcast ready signal. Magwell is how we deliver our pre-mixed content from the TriCaster to our Skype Meeting Broadcasts here for Midday Cafe. Skype TX with QuickLink TX. Connect with millions of Skype users worldwide to create unmissable high-quality live broadcasts. With enhanced control and management features, Skype TX via QuickLink TX allows multiple HD quality audio and video feeds to produce the highest class of broadcast integrations. Skype TX on QuickLink is how we at Midday Cafe bring in our remote presenters for you weekly. Microsoft Azure. Microsoft Azure is a growing collection of integrated cloud services, analytics, computing, database, mobile networking, storage, and web for moving faster, achieving more, and saving money. Our site for Worldwide MTC Studios is hosted on Microsoft Azure, and all of our components run on the Microsoft Cloud Azure. Sitecore, the Sitecore experience platform, put your customers at the center of everything you do, creating customers for life. WWMTCstudios.com is proudly run on the Sitecore experience platform. And Perficient. Perficient is a leading digital transformation consulting firm serving Global 2000 and enterprise customers throughout North America. With unparalleled information technology, management consulting, and creative capabilities, Perficient delivers vision, execution, and value with outstanding digital experience, business optimization, and industry solutions. WWMTCstudios.com was proudly designed and built by Perficient. Finally, visit a Microsoft Technology Center today. Contact your Microsoft rep in order that you can receive the best in solution briefings, architectural design sessions, proof of concepts, and more at your local worldwide Microsoft Technology Center. Hey, welcome to Midday Cafe. Now, I'm your host, Michael Giannotti, sitting on the opposite side this week because I have special guest,
Bill Emmert.
And Bill, who are you? What do you do?
So I'm an architect in the MTC here in Malvern, and I cover the data platform space.
Yes, you do. So he's got some exciting stuff. I'm very excited. We're going to be covering today
The new innovations in SQL 2016.
Because it's 2016.
It is still.
So we should have a new sequel. So we're going to be covering that in depth today. We're also going to have in just a moment some brief news. But before we get kicked off, you know, we had an interesting weekend. I don't know about you, but last night we had snow.
We did.
First day of spring. What is that about?
It's just trying to keep us off the baseball field for a little longer.
I guess that's exactly right. And now from having fun outside. But did you do anything fun this weekend, Bill?
My daughter was home from school, so this was her last couple days before she went back. So
enjoying the family time?
Yes, I was.
Very nice. And we have producer Steve is in the house. And producer Steve, how about yourself this weekend?
Oh, I had a nice weekend.
What'd you do?
Played some football and took in a lot of the March Madness festivities.
March Madness.
Yeah.
And how's your bracket going? Brackets,
everybody's bracket's gone.
It's on life support, my bracket, but it's not quite dead.
Not quite dead.
I think they said this is the first time in history that there's not going to be a perfect bracket.
You know, I believe that. I'm watching all of it this year because there's no dominant team or teams. They kept trading off. I know my team that I've always rooted for, University of Connecticut, won their first game. I saw they were pulling Kansas game two. I was like, yeah, that's a done deal. So out went Connecticut. Although the Lady Huskies, I have to say, Lady Huskies, one of the most dominant
for years.
Franchise or whatever you want to call them in sports history. They're like, it's crazy. They won, I saw their first game by 48 points, I think it was. And they're just rolling. So
48 points.
It's crazy. So, yeah, we had a good weekend. For myself, I indulged in one of the two things that I'm actually good at in this life. You know, as you get older, you find
sleeping?
Your niche.
Because that's mine.
Close. So I am a heck of a sleep. I'm championship quality napper. But I've discovered as I've gotten older that I'm really, my wife and I have discovered we're really good at two things. Snorkeling and binge watching TV. So we binge watched Daredevil.
Oh, nice.
We had every intention of just watching an episode. They, you know, in Netflix, they release the whole season all at once. And that's a problem. Because so we turned in, we watched the first episode, which led to the second episode, which led, and we
did
binged.
You get the whole season done?
The whole season's done. Season two is gone. Now I'm like, what do we do now? Since we're not snorkeling, obviously, right now. So that's my weekend. But in the meantime, a lot has been happening in the world of Microsoft tech news. And I have a couple of stories I wanted to quick cover. The first of which is Project Server. So, you know, we have Project Online, just like we have SharePoint Online, all that stuff, good stuff in Office 365.
There's still customers out there that are not ready for online.
That's exactly correct. So they're with dedicated, you know, on-premise instances. In fact, my son, young Samuel Gennady, who used to sit over in the back there helping to do some of our mixing, he works for a Microsoft partner, they
work
a
lot.
This is their specialty. Their whole solution is built on both the online and on-prem. He spends a lot of his days configuring and setting this stuff up. But Project Server 2016 for on-prem installation has RTM.
So we know who to go to when we have a customer coming in that wants to talk to us about Project Server. We're going to call Sam up.
That's right. I'm going to say, yo, get off your butt and get in here. But that's big news. So all the server products are coming out, as well as SharePoint 2016 has RTM'd. We talked about that last week. That just RTM'd. But along with that, they are having an event around the future of SharePoint. And so they actually have this piece, they talk about it on user forum, but it says what's next. The future of SharePoint event is a live online event May 4th. So they're going to have Jeff Tepper and a bunch of the other folks will be there. I'll have a link to this after our live webcast on
the
archive.
You've had some of these people online already.
We have, and we're going to have more. But they're going to be on there. It says, this is an announcement by Seth Patton, General Manager for SharePoint and OneDrive Product Management.
Seth Patton.
I think we need to get a hold of Seth. I think he needs – Seth, yo, we need you in the house. So He put his name here. Oh, silly Seth.
There you go.
Seth is going to be
some
pestered.
Mistakes people make.
That's right. Another one that I thought was very cool. We love Microsoft OneNote here. Love it. And we have lots of customers that love it. But one of the issues we have seen time and time again when talking with customers is a lot of them started before their 365 days down the whole Evernote path. Yeah. And Evernote's a great tool.
Oh, yeah,
great
absolutely.
Little consumer one for quick, but it doesn't have the full breadth and richness, obviously, of OneNote, nor the integration to the rest of the 365 stack. And so a lot of customers have said, look, we would love to get off of Evernote and get onto OneNote, but we've got this investment. How do we move stuff? We'll have a link after the break. Make the move from Evernote to OneNote. We now have a tool, the OneNote Importer tool, that'll let you do just that. Take your Evernote stuff and suck it on over. In fact, we are going to do a demo of that for this month in productivity. I'm going to set up a whole little demo.
Oh, that's great.
Where I'll build out a Evernote, and then we'll take the tool, and we're going to suck it and walk people through.
Yeah, it's amazing. Evernote's obviously a popular free tool for many.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you from my oldest daughter who went through for her PhD.
Yeah.
She lived in OneNote. Everything was done in OneNote. All her notes, and now she uses it as she teaches.
Yes. And you know, same here. My son, who had an Office 365 account, Sam, you know, during college, he had the occasion, because he was doing a lot of multimedia as a communications major. He had the big, I used to call it the Schwarzenegger, you know, model laptop.
I think we've all carried that.
Yeah, I mean, that thing, and by design, it was huge, right? But it was an Alienware. It still is an Alienware, like 12 pounds, a beast. But it could but that's really it's basically a desktop.
Sure.
It's mobile, right? So to class, he would carry Dell Venue 8, Bluetooth keyboard, take notes in OneNote, sometimes do the audio insert, get back to his room, boom, it's all live and available.
That's great.
So OneNote, we're going to post that up so you can import yours, get off of Evernote, you know, and start getting into the richness of that is OneNote. Next up, I thought these last two were very pertinent to today, although they're not SQL 2016 per se. They have to do with how we expose data. So the first of which is learn how to shape and transform data with unprecedented ease in Excel 2016. There are all kinds of very slick, cool features around transforming your data. This is a pretty lengthy article with examples that you could walk through, try yourself, take a look at. Highly encourage you, because we just can, you always talk about this. When we talk about data and where it ends up when people really want to use it.
Back in Excel, 95% of all corporate reporting, whether you give it to them in Power BI, you give it to them in Crystal Reports,
SAP,
reporting services, whatever you give it to
them,
they're going to take that data and they're going to bring it back into Excel so they can manipulate it and make it look the way they want it to look.
And being able to refresh it, have it tied to the live data, it's powerful stuff.
Yeah, a lot of people spend a lot of manual time constantly pulling in the same data, shaping it, you know, manipulating it to make it look the way they want. And now we can do by capturing that manipulation once, and then every time you go to refresh, it does everything for you.
Having it right off the bat. And, you know, the beautiful thing is we can do that, and now we can also do it in the cloud. You can shove that stuff up. We're doing stuff with ExpressRoute and tying data.
We'll talk about this capability, which is part of the Power Query inside of Excel. Actually, we can take advantage of that when you move some stuff to SSIS.
Awesome.
In the future.
So, there's that. And then the last is, for you admins on Office 365. I almost said SharePoint.
I know, right?
It's 365 admins. The new reporting portal is now live. We have activity dashboards. They surface all kinds of the visualizations folks were asking for. And how do I make that? And having to custom build it. It's live now. Take a look if you haven't. It's live. It's rolling out to the tenants. So if you haven't seen it yet, you'll probably see a little bar at the top. Again, we're going to be doing some sessions showing that. I actually have some folks from corporate. They're going to talk about the whole new admin portal.
That reporting and looks reporting. Awfully familiar, almost like either Excel or Power BI.
It does. And right in the portal. We're giving it to you. Yeah, I mean, we're re-leveraging all that stuff. So that's what I've got. We'll have links to all these stories so you can explore them for yourself, check it out for yourself. But I think we're ready for a little sequel.
I mean, that wasn't it? I thought that was it.
Well, have a great day, everybody. No. So what have you got for us today, Bill?
So we're going to cover the new features. I'm really going to go through and talk about the different pieces that are being targeted for each of the different areas of SQL. And it really goes to start off with that Microsoft's data platform is not just on-prem, but it extends to the cloud. And it's not just either on-prem or in the cloud. There is that hybrid capability.
Hey, let's go. Did you go full screen with that, Stephen? Put us on full screen so he can, not us, I mean the, all right, he's giving the thumbs
I'm
up.
Good.
Way to go.
We can see it. So as you can see over in the left, lower left corner.
Ooh, it's, 1 second, I'm sorry. Stop the presses, come back to us. I was remiss. We have people watching us.
Okay.
There's actually people out there through that lens. If we look through the lens, you can see them, they're real tiny. So people through the lens. If you have questions, comments, shout outs, we want to encourage you, interact. Lots of new stuff today, so please ask. If you look below what you're seeing right now, you will see, take a look down there, Bill. There it is.
Oh,
there
I see
is
it.
The Skype Q&A panel.
Got it.
So folks can look down there, ask your questions. It's anonymous. You can give your name. We'd love to hear. If you want to just even say hello, we'd love to hear where you're from. Give us a shout out, who you are and where you're from. We'll shout out to you. If you have a question, producer Steve is itching back there. In fact, I just saw him. He was like scratching. He's nervous.
We need questions.
He wants questions. He likes questions. He thrives on them. Ask your questions to anything we're talking about here. And even if you have comments, we love them as well, and he'll tee those up. So please interact with us. And with that, let's go back to Bill's slide, full screen.
Okay. So as we're looking down at the lower left-hand corner, or where it says on-premise, you'll see SQL Server and APS. That's our on-premise solution. And when we start to look in the future, again, on the bottom, you see it. We are extending into the beyond relational. And we'll talk about those capabilities today when we start to look at what are we putting into SQL Server that allows us to go beyond just the relational database engine.
So when we say relational, beyond relational, does this apply at home as well with my wife? Because, you know, I can move beyond just the relationship.
I'm not going there.
You're not going there. Okay, well, we'll keep the sequel. So, very cool. So, all this is changing. You can
see
some of it.
Rational.
That's rational.
Not relational.
Ah.
Got it?
Yeah, I think so.
That's
why we're right there. We'll leave it right there. We're
going
to stay on the relational. So, with the database, it makes sense. I can understand this.
Very good. We have SQL Server on-prem, which everybody has been familiar with.
Yeah.
Obviously, it goes back many, many years. Actually started working on it myself when it was SQL Server 1 on OS 2.
OS
2? I was only 2 years old then.
Isn't that OS 2 Warp or something? Isn't that called?
It was.
Warp. I remember that.
And the database only allowed for 16 meg of memory.
But that was huge then.
It was.
I remember those days.
And you had people in the back cammering on the stone to get
cuneiform and the whole bit. Yeah.
And then we have our analytics platform system, or APS, or you may have heard of it before as our parallel data warehouse. That's a MPP appliance.
Mm-hmm.
And great performance out of that. Give you a good example. Customer was running a seven table data warehouse that had about 20 uh, I mean sorry two terabyte of data with indexes on SQL 2008 R2.
Yep.
And their query ran for about an hour and 5 minutes.
Okay.
We moved that same, those seven tables over to the APS, and it ran that same query in 23 seconds.
Whoa, so big performance increases, right?
Now, 2014 did that same thing in 5 minutes.
Gotcha. So it's been a steady incremental.
Yeah, so there are things, the technology, and we'll talk about some of those technologies today, but there's technologies that allows you to get performance like that on-prem, and it doesn't necessarily need to go to, if you don't need 23 seconds, and being able to save at least almost an hour of performance, we can get to that by going on-prem and just making some modifications to the tables.
Nice.
Not to the application code. Okay, so as we move up the stack, we're going up into the cloud. We have obviously SQL Server, Azure, VMs. So running your hosted VMs, not on-prem, but in Azure, and gain the performance that you need there and scalability. Azure SQL Database, which is a extended version of the on-premise version of SQL.
Gotcha.
So some of the stuff that's going to be talked about today in SQL Server 2016 is already up in SQL DB, okay? And and the Azure SQL Data Warehouse. Azure SQL Data Warehouse is the APS in a cloud version. So remove that on-premise appliance and be able to take advantage of that same capability, where I can actually scale up my environment in seconds, and I can also pause it, so that way I don't incur that extra processing time when I'm not using it.
Gotcha.
It possibly is a place where you only need it to process information on a nightly or weekly basis. And then we slide over to the other side beyond relational, and we start to look at Azure Data Lake. That's a high-performant HDFS store that allows us to store that data and store large amounts of data for use in the future. HD Insight is a Hadoop implementation. Actually, it's our relationship with Hortonworks, and it's Hortonworks Hadoop. Both running either in a Windows version or a Linux version. And then we have DocumentDB, which is a JSON store document store repository, or NoSQL repository. And in the center there brings it all together, with Power BI being our visualization for BI. Azure Machine Learning, allowing you to do predictive analytics. And the Azure Data Factory is, in essence, a orchestrator for data movement. So it can integrate with SSIS and other processes that you have to be able to move data from on-prem to the cloud and back to the to on-prem. And then federated queries, allowing us to query across multiple Azure SQL databases, for example. So that really is the Microsoft Data Platform today. What you get tomorrow, we don't know. There's stuff rolling out every day.
Right? Yeah, it just keeps, I know, that's the thing. It just keeps, it's
evolving. It's amazing how fast, and trying to keep up on it all is tough.
It's a lot of work, yeah. Awesome.
So SQL 2016 is everything is built in. So when you start to look at, for example, the industry leader and the mission critical, these silos or these areas are where we sit in the way of the industry.
Now, before we're going to be showing some, and this is awesome, like the very first one, boom, there we are, leader, right?
We are the leader. This has been a long time coming, but we finally edged out Oracle.
It's beautiful. And the thing is, when we talk about this, and I love this, the built-in, when you invest, you're not then having to spend tons of money on all kinds of add-ons just to get some of these functions we're talking about.
No.
You're getting it with the product, in the box.
With the box, right?
Awesome.
So everything that you need is there. No additional product cost to purchase the...
What's up, Steven?
You guys want to take questions? We got one already.
You got a question. Sure. What's the question?
I heard that SQL was going to be able to run on Linux. What information do you have about that?
So SQL on
Linux.
So
yes, it was announced at the SQL launch two weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yes, we did announce that we will run SQL Server on Linux in the near future. And the current version or the public beta will be on Red Hat.
So Red Hat, that's what we're looking at, we're targeting. And now, is that on-premise or the cloud or both? Or how are they, did they talk, or we still don't know?
We didn't, to be honest with you, I have not been able to catch up on the Linux version because I'm trying to get ready. We're talking a year out anyway, right? So we're trying to get ready for the 2016 on-prem launch, but I can tell you that this is something the SQL team has wanted to do for years.
Yep, I remember.
It was never...
it's a new Microsoft,
Yes, it's a new Microsoft, and we've heavily adopted other technologies and being able to provide our capabilities in conjunction with other technologies.
Yeah.
So yes, the answer is we will have SQL on Linux in the near future. Keep an eye out for it. I believe you can go in there and apply for early access to it. Look at the SQL Server website off of Microsoft.com.
Cool. And as we have more information about
I will post something along with on your
we'll
site.
We'll get
for
some
that.
More. All right. Any more questions, or is that it for now?
That's all we've got so far.
All righty. So again, if you have questions, and let's go back full screen with these beautiful views here.
So the next tile is really explaining that over the last 6 years, Microsoft SQL Server has been the most reliable and most secure. So our last year, in 2015, we had three exposures. That was actually on the 2008 and 2008 R2 version of SQL.
Which are ancient history.
Not the 2012, not the 2014 versions.
And now we're up to 16. So that's many revs back.
That's correct. So if you take a look at it, over the last 6 years, we've had eight vulnerabilities over 6 years.
So basically, we're kicking butt and taking names.
We are. We're doing a great job of making sure that we're providing you the most secure database that you can purchase. Highest performance. This happens to be on the TPCH, right? Non-clustered, so single server. You can see we have the number one, number two, and number three spots. So that gives you an idea that our performance is still providing the best in class.
Very nice.
We also come at a cheap cost when it comes to end-to-end mobile BI for any device.
Mm-hmm.
And when we say any device, Power BI is available on the iOS, the Android, and also the Windows devices.
And again, that's part of that whole, the new Microsoft, right?
That's correct.
You know, like I have on my iPhone, I'm running Power BI.
That's
and
correct.
It rocks.
Yep. So, unfortunately for us Microsoft people who still have Microsoft phones, some of the applications roll out before on the iOS and the Android before it does on the Windows phone. And we acknowledge that, you know, the majority of the users out there have either one of those two operating systems.
Which is why we do it.
And that's why we do it. But assured that we are still continuing to move forward, so we'll continue to get enhancements and roll out on all platforms. And then the last one is, one of the things we're gonna be talking about during this presentation is our investment in R. And R plus in memory allows us to do in-memory advanced analytics. R is actually being embedded into the SQL 2016 engine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be able to run an R server as a instance for SQL Server, and it just perform advanced analytics. And those R models that you create, you can later move up into the cloud when you're ready. So the development that you may put in on-prem is not wasted when you're ready to move to the cloud. And in-memory works across all workloads. So in-memory is becoming an absolute need in many environments. One, from a performance perspective, and two, to be able to handle real-time data analytics where customers are needing to make those decisions with data that are near real-time and not having to wait, you know, 12 or 24 hours for that data to be processed and presented up.
Right.
And consistent experience. So we're going to provide you with the tools that will allow you to manage the environment both on-prem and in the cloud. I'll be able to start on-prem, I'll be able to move data into the cloud. So from a 2016 perspective, we look at three separate categories. Mission critical performance, which is obviously the most important thing when it comes to making sure that my environment can meet the demands that comes with an ever-growing environment for a company. We want to be able to get a deeper insight across data, no matter where the data exists, whether it be on-prem or it's in the cloud, whether it be in SAP, or whether it be in Salesforce, or whether it be in Access or Microsoft SQL Server, right? And be able to get the insights into that. And we want to be able to hyperscale into the cloud. So be able to start on-prem and be able to go that hybrid environment. So we're going to start with the conversation around mission critical performance. We're going to cover the different features that are being enhanced or added in each of these areas. So under performance, we have the new operational analytics. So when I say new, it's not really new, but what we're adding, we're enhancing the performance. So being able to do both in-memory and disk-based operational analytics across that data, being able to take data and actually turn it on its side to be column stored, being able to take in-memory and be able to expand the surface so that way we can now support terabytes of memory and storage to be able to load larger tables into memory, right? And giving us more parallelism across the CPUs. The big thing with in-memory is if you had at all played with it, there was no altering tables up there. Now we provide alter table support. We provide with clustered column stores. We also have non-clustered column store indexes. We can provide that over in-memory tables, right? When it comes to actually being able to analyze and be able to see what's changing in the application workload, we have the query data store. Query data store allows me to monitor incoming transactions and being able to see when they might change. So for example, I might have a report that runs a query every day. Mm-hmm. Every day it runs consistently where it runs and comes back in 30 seconds. Then nothing changes except for data,
right?
Constantly changing. That query now is running running probably 3, 4, 5 minutes.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
The only thing that's changed is the data, the volume of the data. You would expect that the query that you've been using is still appropriate, but a new plan was generated. I'm able to see where I'm now using different plans for the same query, and I'll be able to force plans through a visual UI.
Oh, cool.
No longer do I have to go in there and look at all the information that's necessary using queries.
Mm-hmm.
I can do it through queries if I feel more comfortable that way.
Right.
But at the same time,
like
I can
Neo
do it through a UI. And I'll be showing this a little later.
Cool.
Native JSON. So those customers that currently are familiar with the XML support in SQL Server, we're providing JSON support in SQL Server. So I'll be able to store documents in a JSON format. I'll also be able to rip JSON documents and insert them and store them in relational format. I can also be able to run queries over those JSON stored documents. And then the temporal database support, which allows us to actually leverage point in time views of data. Think of it as around the same kind of conceptual idea as a database snapshot. But in reality, it's not. It's actually keeping historical tables of data. As the data changes, I'm storing that off at almost no impact to the application performance. So any data row change that I've specified a temporal table for another table, I'll be able to go back and see as data changes what the changes were since a certain point in time. Security, always encrypted. So if you've used encryption in SQL Server, we use the decrypt and the encrypt function, and everybody knows it works, but it's not the most performant thing when you have to de-encrypt or encrypt many rows of data.
Right. Yep.
And if I have a column that's encrypted, I can't search that column unless I create my own hashed column of that, and then that's a lot of development that you have to put into create that hashed column.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're providing the capability to do encrypted columns, and the encryption key is not stored on the database, but it's actually stored at the client.
Okay.
So you'll add a client module that will allow you to add the encryption key down at the client level. So data always moves back and forth encrypted, and it's de-encrypted at the client. However, depending on the encryption that I use for the column, I can actually search. So if I use a hashed encryption on a column, we will use the same hash every time. So if you actually say I want to search by Social Security number, but the Social Security number column is encrypted,
mm-hmm.
you'll still be able to search utilizing that column, and we will search the hashed column for you. Row level security. Many customers have asked for this for a long time, and being able to limit what gets returned to a client based on what rows I should have access to based on security. We are now adding this capability into 2016. We even go to the extent where if you want, you can apply this, and a DBA may be able to manage the objects in the database, create indexes, run backups, but if they try and do a select against the tables, for example, the salary table, the employee salary table, they will not get any rows back. And I'll demonstrate this. Another enhancement being made, which is available currently on Azure SQL Database, is dynamic data masking. Everybody's has experienced this. If you ever purchased anything with a credit card, and you get the credit card receipt back, you notice that the only thing that shows about your credit card is the last four digits of your credit card on that receipt. Everything else is masked out. That's dynamic data masking. So I can specify a function over a column and say, anytime a person without the right credentials does a select on this column, they're going to get the data back, but it's going to be masked. So that way they can't interpret what the data is. And we're adding additional enhancements around security in auditing and enhancements for tracking history and record changes. I get to talk to customers often about HA and DR. This is actually
what's
one
HA and DR?
High availability and disaster recovery.
Disaster recovery
disaster
for when
recovery.
It all goes bye-bye.
Yes.
And that's one of the things we love with the cloud and SQL.
It is great. In the cloud, we provide that capability for high availability and disaster for you. But when I have to do it on-prem, one of the things that customers have used in the past is database mirroring. Well, database mirroring has evolved over time, and actually in 2016, database mirroring actually goes away. We announced the deprecation of that in 2014 and 2012. And what we do is we actually have a thing called always-on availability groups. It allows me to group multiple databases together and be able to create a secondary copy of that database. And depending on whether I'm in a synchronous or asynchronous mode, will depend on whether I have a possibility for data loss or no data loss when a failure occurs. So when we're in synchronous mode, data actually hits the transaction log on the primary and gets entered the entry into the transaction log on the secondary before it commits back to the application.
Gotcha.
Now, if your latency between your primary and secondary is long, it may not make sense for your application, so I would go to an asynchronous mode, which says that we'll commit into the transaction log on the primary database and then commit back to the application saying that it's there, and we will get it over to the secondary when possible. Now, in reality, we've done a great job at increasing the performance across the line, mm-hmm. and I haven't seen very many applications where they're more than a couple seconds or, you know, several seconds behind, even at high transaction throughput. But we've been asked by customers to be able to provide not only a primary to secondary, a single failover, automatic failover, but let's say I want to failover in the data center first to a secondary. But if something happens in my data center, I want to automatically fail over to another data center. So now we're adding a third leg in that failover. So I can have three separate
replicas. So wait
replicas.
A minute. Let me back up just a second.
Sure.
So we can go from, and you can come back here for a second, Steve, while I'll go through this. So if we wanted to, you're saying we could have within my data center, I can have replicating
and backing
up. Yeah, so
many customers use clustering,
right.
or what we call instance failover, which says
yeah.
I'm protecting the server at the in the data center first.
Right.
Right? But their failure point is still the disk, the database disk.
So if you have a disaster or some other something that causes a failure in that data center, even though you may be highly resilient within it, you're out of luck.
That's right. So typically what customers do is use that instance failover to be able to fail over from one machine to another in the data center. So what we're doing is we're recommending, I often recommend that you no longer have to use that instance failover and that you use always on availability groups where I say I'm going to fail over from this machine to this machine. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And what it's doing is it's not moving the disks. It's actually now got an active disk on the secondary machine. So my primary failure will happen in the data center first.
Gotcha.
But in the case yep. that both of those boxes become unavailable, and it could be a network glitch,
sure.
you know, a network outage, or the data center's burning.
For some
who
reason.
Who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I want to automatically fail over and make that secondary in another data center the primary.
Gotcha.
Right?
Yep.
So now we have the capability of not only failing over to one, but I could fail over to a second. And
nice.
You set your priority order, right? So
yep.
I want to fail over in the data center first, but when possible, and not when it's not possible to fail over in the data center, I'll fail over to the secondary data center.
Gotcha. All right.
Right?
Cool.
Now, the other thing that we're adding, which is
can
really
you come
exciting.
Come back to the screen.
Yeah. So the one thing we are, you know, another one that we're adding is we have the capability today in 2014, 2012 to be able to read from a secondary, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can have my my application actually make a read-only connection to a secondary, so I'm not hitting, for reporting purposes, the primary database. So that's only used for
nice.
Writes, and
yep.
the secondary is used for reads.
Gotcha.
Now, if I need to scale that out, I then have to do it outside of the always-on availability
right.
capability, right? So what we're providing is round robin load balancing across the secondary replicas. So if I defined the replicas as being part of the round robin load balancing, if I have, for example, four secondary boxes, I will go with a connection to server one, then server two, then server three, then server four, mm-hmm. and then the next connection will come to server server one again. And we will load balance across those secondaries while they're available, right?
Gotcha.
So it gives us the capability of scaling out that readable capability, right? We used to actually only fail over at the whole instance level, even though it was always on, was at a database group level.
Mm-hmm.
It would only be if the instance on that SQL server failed. Right? Now we're able to actually indicate down to the failure at the database. So even though I might have five databases in an availability group, if one of them should fail and go into a recovery mode, right? And today with 2014 and 2012, nothing will happen to that availability group, but the application becomes unavailable, right? Unless I manually push the availability group but over to the secondary. Now you'll be able to mark that you want to do automatic failover based on a database health. So if a database, if one of the databases of those five actually goes into a recovery mode, we'll fail the whole group over to a secondary, allowing us to be able to do more granular availability. And then the last two, DTC has not been supported. I can now support DTC.
What is DTC?
Distributed transactions.
You got a lot of acronyms there.
Yeah.
Distributed transactions.
We're well known for our acronyms.
That's true. So distributed transactions
means that I have a transaction that not only impacts one database, but also impacts another.
Gotcha.
So the transaction's got to make an entry, an update, or insert into both databases before it says I'm done, right? We now support those distributed transactions with Always On.
Very nice.
And the last thing is the SSIS is now going to be supported with Always On.
The SSIS.
Support for SSIS with Always On. What that means is the SSI database.
Okay, gotcha. Yep.
Will be supported
nice.
Under Always On.
And that wasn't previous.
That was not.
Okay. Yes, what do you... Steven's raising his hand. You want to come back to us then? He's raising his hand like a school child.
You got a question for you, Bill?
Yes.
For failover, can one of the three be in Azure?
That was a great question. I should have mentioned that. So, yes, you have the capability of being able to fail over to Azure. However, unless you're running Express Route and you have a large pipe or your transaction workload can handle the latency of being able to update the database
right.
on-prem and wait for it to update the database in Azure,
yep.
right? I will probably end up with an asynchronous to Azure.
And that's because, again, with that, when you have all that delay, so, but to clarify for folks, so Express Route is when you have an MPLS connection through your provider, like AT&T or somebody.
That's correct.
Where they're giving you, and we support that. You can get a direct pipe with routed traffic so it doesn't go out through the public internet from your environment straight to Azure.
Yeah, typically most customers are going to have a secondary up in Azure.
Yep.
And they will have it asynchronous. And I will be able to manually fail over to Azure
gotcha.
If I need to.
But if you had Azure, the MPLS and Express, could you?
You could.
If you had, had those pipes, because then it looks to my environment just like it's part of my data.
Yeah, and one of the things I will be mentioning later is we have the capability of using the replica wizard to be able to create that secondary replica in Azure.
Do I need a different hat for that wizard?
Yeah, you need the wizard hat.
With the...
No, that's your dunce hat.
My dunce hat. That's when my teachers put me in the corner. All right, so cool. All right, so I hope that answered your question.
But yes, I can use Azure as a secondary. Many customers are. and there are other things I can do with Azure, and we'll be talking about those.
And for those folks, if you have questions around ExpressRoute and Azure and what that means, be sure to bing it. All right, let's come on back to screen here.
One of the things you will notice during the setup of 2016, we now support the capability of having it will actually create automatically, which you can actually change, mm-hmm. but it will automatically create multi-file tempdb based on our learnings that many customers still go with a single tempdb file, and that becomes a bottleneck in many applications. So one of the things that we're recommending is customers make tempdb with multiple files.
Gotcha.
By default, when I go through the installation, tempdb will be the number of tables or files will typically equal to the number of core that I have in the system. I can roll that back, I can expand that depending on what my, you know, my preferences are.
Right.
So deeper insight across the data, access to anywhere. So we talked about, earlier in the slide, I talked about the capability of SQL Server becoming, more to that, not only on the relational side, but the non-relational side, right? Mm-hmm. So Polybase, which was or has been available in our APS appliance, is now coming to SQL Server on-prem.
Nice.
What is Polybase? It allows me to define an external table, almost like a linked database, but mm-hmm. let's not call it that.
Yep.
It's an external table that happens to reside in Hadoop. And I can query that external table and join the data across both the relational and non-relational tables, right? The non-relational being Hadoop, in a single query.
So there was a query from us about a query. That's right. You like how I said instead of a
let
question,
me optimize this query.
Let's optimize this query. It's supported in SQL 2016. Can we make this after the fact? Will we be able to attach this deck? Is this deck public?
Yes, this deck is shareable.
So we will get that and we will add it. Thank you.
Yes.
We have one more question if you want one.
Sure.
Whoa, we got another question. As long as you show our bright, shiny faces.
You're on.
Oh.
If we're an Oracle shop.
Yes.
Are there any high transactional workloads that SQL 16 couldn't handle?
I will answer that to tell you that one of our largest customers is a highest transaction customers is a gaming site.
Okay, gaming.
A gaming site. I don't visit them because I work hard for my money, and
so they're a gaming
my
location.
Daughter can find ways to spend that money.
When you say a
money.
Site, we don't mean a website. You mean a location?
It's a gaming site.
Website.
It is a website.
Okay, and what kind of transactional rates
so,
are we talking?
So with 2014, they were able to get with in-memory, they were able to get up to 50 or 60,000 transactions a second.
Okay.
They made some changes with 2016 with both in-memory and column store.
Right.
And also with the in-memory, they optimized some of their stored procedures to be mm-hmm. in-memory. And they were able to exceed 250,000 transactions a second.
Wow. So, and I guess, so one of the things, and clearly, folks, we are going head-to-head. Although we support Oracle on Azure and all that stuff, we are going hard after this space as we have built up. We are now in the leader quadrant. So, it's one of those things you're going to want to evaluate those applications, application by application. But having said that, we are now very confident of our ability to not only be on par, but ahead of Oracle and across these workloads. And I would just throw this out there, if you haven't seen it, we're actually doing some crazy stuff right now. If you have those Oracle apps and you're wanting to evaluate and bring them over, We're doing some pretty crazy things around licensing to make it very advantageous for you to do so.
That's correct. And if you have an account manager, Microsoft account manager, reach out to them.
Yeah.
And they can give you information about that. That
there are some customers licensing. Making the move that are now saving millions.
Yes.
In the millions.
Yes. Now,
by moving.
You know, when it comes to migrating something from Oracle to SQL Server, a lot of times the database is not going to be the big concern.
Yeah.
It's the application. And many times we look at it as saying, if the application is due for a rewrite or an upgrade,
it's time to revisit.
It may be a time for you to revisit and just see what it might impact, how it might impact you from a dollar perspective to see if that can be migrated.
Yep.
Right?
Exactly.
We have tools that can give you some estimates. We have partners that can come in and give you those estimates also.
Yep.
And they'll do an analysis for you. So,
excellent.
Thank you for the question.
Yeah, it's a great
question.
We'd
be happy to move your stuff off of Oracle.
Yes. Bill will personally come out to your location with food. No. But, so absolutely. So, I guess the short answer is we're very confident in our ability to handle everything that Oracle
workload.
Can, any workload at this point. We have right now there are some crazy deals if you talk to your rep where they're like waiving fees and all kinds of licensing stuff that's kind of crazy. But talk to your rep.
Yes.
We're not going to speak to that because we're not licensing guys.
No.
But there are some crazy things happening and we want to work with you. So let's head on back to full screen here.
So going back into the access
and just
data.
As a quick time check, just so you know, because I know you want to do some demos, so we're going to run a little long, folks. So stay on.
I will pick this up a little,
and that's okay because I'm here. I got nowhere to go.
Neither do I. Enhancements to SSIS. One of the big things is supporting for Power Query. So one of the things that we talked about was shaping data. So think about what I can do in Power Query inside of Excel.
Yeah.
I can actually take that now and I can actually bring that into SSIS.
Very nice.
Enterprise grade analysis services. Yes, we are enhancing multi-dimensional analytics in SSAS. We are also adding and improving the performance on a tabular in SSAS. You will see some other enhancements around in-server analytics.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a number of enhancements that we're doing at the SQL Server Analysis Services level to increase the performance and improve the performance through those tools. We have a single SS data, so the SQL Server data tools will be available with Visual Studio 2015. You won't have to worry about waiting 6 months to 12 months for 2015 to be supported.
Very nice.
And then we are also enhancing a product that hasn't been enhanced in a couple of releases, which is the Master Data Services. So there'll be...
I'm glad you said it instead of just MDS.
MDS, Master Data Services. Yeah, so I'm learning to say what the acronyms are. All right. Mobile BI.
Yeah.
We made an acquisition about a year ago from a company called DataZen. We're taking that product and rolling it and enhancing it into our mobile BI strategy. So being able to visualize data on an iOS, an Android, and a Windows device, all from the same application. And we're enhancing reporting services, providing a brand new modern UI. No longer will I have to add an ActiveX control to print. We will print directly from the browser. Reports will render in HTML5.
Mm-hmm.
And also I can render in other formats such as PDF and Excel and Word. So. And we're doing a lot of stuff around parameterizations or parameters within reporting services. So we've done a great job there. One of the things that we're not going to talk about today, but you're going to start to see integration of many of our development tools both on-prem and in the cloud. So whether I develop something in Visual Studio for reporting services, or I develop it in DataZen, or I utilize the report builder, I'll be able to run it both on-prem and in the cloud very shortly. Not all of it will be ready right for the 2016 release, but shortly thereafter we are going to get to that point. And then I mentioned R integration. Advanced analytics, being able to create and bring predictive analytics right into the relational database engine. I'll be able to run R server as a standalone server and be able to leverage the capabilities of advanced analytics R and be able to leverage R models to do my analytics. And we'll provide you with extended R scripts and a library from within the Microsoft Azure Marketplace. So you'll be able to take advantage of either free or by purchase R models that are going to be available to do things that you typically would want to do. I'm picking this up a little so I can get to the demo so everybody won't miss that. deeper insights across the data. So hybrid solutions. We introduced and announced, and actually it's now in a preview mode, StretchDB or Stretch Database. It allows me to take tables and identify tables that I want to stretch into Azure. Think about being able to take certain data and trickle that data out to Azure, making it available if a query needs it, but moving that historical data off onto slower, cheaper storage. And I'm not saying that it's necessarily slower, but because it's going to be sitting in Azure, if I have to query it, it's going to have to stretch and get that data pulled down into the local DB to return. But it allows me to move or migrate. Let's say I have to keep 7 years of data, but really the business only really looks at the last 3 years. And maybe once or twice a year, somebody says, I need to look at something past year three. Well, why keep that on local storage that's going to cost you a lot and you know, barely ever get used and backed up often? Why not stretch it up into Azure and allow Azure to store it at cents on the gigabyte? And it now allows me to retrieve the data through a single query. The application doesn't need to know that the data is up in Azure. The engine will take care of that. As I started to allude to in the previous slide, Power BI will be coming to on-premise, right? But in the meantime, I want to be able to leverage Power BI on-premises, right, against on-premises data.
Mm-hmm.
One, I can do that through analysis services doing direct queries. So analysis services sits in front of my data and I do direct queries. So as I go up and I produce a visualization in Power BI, it makes that connection to analysis services and pulls the data. It leverages the data management gateway, which is holding the credentials that allows me to define how Power BI can get into that analysis services or any other kind of data store that's on-prem. So analysis services goes through that gateway to have access to your on-prem data. Hybrid scenarios with SSIS, so I can actually integrate SSIS. As I mentioned, the Azure Data Factory is a orchestrator, and I can actually call SSIS and information about the package lineage and all of that will be maintained and be able to access both on-prem and in the cloud. And enhanced backups to Azure. One of the things that we did here is that, you know, it's great to be able to run a backup to Azure and being able to have that backup encrypted and all of that, but it's still a little slow. Well, we're improving that. We're reducing it at least 50% in reduction in storage. which also is reducing the amount of data that gets shipped, or the amount of data that has to get shipped, because we're reducing the compression and reducing the amount of storage allows us to store more data in a smaller space. Easy migrations of on-premise SQL Server. So now we'll be able to now migrate a SQL Server on-premise and say, I want to migrate the SQL Server up to Azure, right? And also simplifying the add Azure replica wizard. So I mentioned earlier, I want to be able to configure an always-on replica in Azure, so I can actually spin up an Azure VM as a secondary and add that secondary through the Azure replication wizard. And then common development environments, both on-prem and in the cloud, so Active Directory, Visual Studio, Hyper-V, and System Center. System Center, I can actually leverage the data both on-prem and in the cloud to measure that information, to monitor availability and things like that. So that's the slides. What I wanted to do is do a couple of quick demos. So we'll do dynamic data masking, we'll do row level security, and one of the things that from a DBA perspective, the query store and the live query statistics, we'll go in and demo that.
Awesome.
So I'm going to exit out of this.
Into demo time.
Demo time.
Yes, sir.
We've got one question for you.
One question, and are you showing our bright, shiny faces?
Yes. For the Power BI you mentioned, is this the same as what our execs use on their phones and tablets? Does this take a lot of work to create against 2016?
So, Power BI for the mobile is going to provide the capability, one, as an app, but I can also connect to Power BI from a browser on any mobile device, right? Because it's a service in Azure, right? So I can, actually, let me say that again. It's a service in the cloud,
right?
So I can connect to Power BI because I have the capability of being able to identify the type of device I'm on. We're able to, you'll be able to create the screen depending on the device in which I'm looking at it. When I'm looking at a device, when I'm looking at a Power BI or I'm looking at the dashboard in landscape mode, it's going to show the same whether it be on a phone, a tablet, or a PC. But when I turn it horizontally into portrait mode, That's when the display actually has to be modified to be able to fit. So you're testing this out?
Yeah, I'm just pulling up.
Can you
minimize your thing 1 second there?
Sure can.
Just from the top. And hit the camera app. And oh, I don't have the camera. Oh, well, I guess it's going to show us. And you see what we're really seeing, the green screen. So just so people see. So when we talk about Power BI and mobile and being able to auto resize. So here we are. And then I can go ahead and I could zoom in and do all that and be able to manipulate.
So as you notice, when it's in portrait mode, it actually reformats.
Yeah.
So that way I can see better.
Yep.
And I still have access to everything.
You can close that.
I still have access to everything, but it just reformats the screen for you automatically.
And I think the important thing is, so the short answer is, I guess, they're execs. That's the kind of stuff they might be using.
Absolutely.
And to create those views, this is not a heavy-duty programming effort.
No.
In fact, you know, our manager last week for one of my clients actually did a quick demo during lunch and showed how he built one against multiple data sets, which could include 2016.
That's correct. And we use it here to monitor our IoT devices that we have around our facility.
So take a look at that if you have, and we'll have a different session on that. But why don't we go ahead and go full screen again with Bill's, and there we are. So what are we looking at here?
All right, so I'm gonna start with the dynamic data masking. So first thing I'm gonna do is obviously create a database. And then from there, I'm going to go in and create a table, and I'm going to insert some rows into it. And you can see that in the table, I'm going to have first name, last name, social security number, I'm sorry, credit card number,
yep,
phone number, and email, right? So when I first create this, and now I go back and I want to take a look at it, if I do a select over that without any masking at all, right, you can see I can see all the data. Everybody's able to see that, right? So here's all the rows. I get to see the credit card numbers, the phone numbers, the email addresses. So now what we want to do is I want to go in there and I want to now alter that table. And I'm going to put a mask, and I'm going to use the default mask over the phone number, right? So I'm altering that table, that column, and I'm saying put a masked function. And when we say default, default represents a certain masking over the data type. So because this is, it's stored as character data, mm-hmm, it's gonna get X's. If it was numeric data, there would be zeros or something else. So I'm going to alter the three tables, the three columns, the phone number, credit card. So credit card, just take a quick look at that. What I'm saying is I'm going to put a partial mask over it. It's going to precede with no characters from the original credit card number, X's, and then the last four characters are going to be shown, just like we would see if we went and bought something at a store. And then the last one is an email. An email has its own specific mask. So I'm going to execute these. And now the next thing I want to do is I'm going to create a user. That user is going to be able to look at the card info. So now when I do that, you'll notice that right now I have full access to everything that's on there. But now what I'm going to do is I've created this user, but from me, this is being executed as me,
right?
Not as test user, but I can now execute this statement as test user to see what the test user is going to see.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And as you notice here, the data comes back and it says the credit card number is masked, the phone number is masked, and so is the email address. Mm-hmm. So I can't make heads or tails out of the data that's there, except for the last four characters of the credit card and a couple of characters in the email address. Right. Everything else is masked off that I shouldn't be able to see. That's dynamic data masking. Now, I realize that this is not going to be appropriate if you're running a third-party app,
mm-hmm,
unless the third party allows you to add masking over those columns.
This is really for those custom apps that you're
building
in-house.
These are for custom apps where you need, yep, to mask and protect PMI information.
Gotcha.
And you don't want to go to the extent of actually encrypting it in the database.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to get rid of this and we're done with that one. The next one is row level security. So I'm going to use a table here. And I'm going to select from that table, select from the patients table. As you notice here, I have seven patients that are in the hospital. They're in different rooms in different wings of the hospital. It allows me to see all of that information. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to select to see what the roles are and what the roles that each of these users that are in my database have. So all the defined users are here. So they're in either a nurse, a doctor, an admin, or an operator, and then the DB owner. So those are the different users that are defined in my application and have access to the database. Now I'm going to actually select over those columns. And you notice here that it's telling me that, and I'm joining this to the staff duties table and who those individuals are. So it's telling me that Clara Barton is a nurse and she's allowed access to wing one and wing two. And there are start and end times for her access to those wings. So if a nurse or a doctor gets reassigned to a different wing during the month or during the year, right, all I have to do is put in end the previous time and add the new time in which they are covering a different wing. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a new schema. What I'm doing here is setting up now for the predicate function that's going to be used.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. The predicate?
Yeah, so this is actually the thing that's going to do.
Are you getting into grammar?
I am. And don't ask me
subject and
about
predicate.
English. My English is my second language. I'm going to create a function, the security predicate. What this is going to do is it's going to allow me to bind this to a table, and it allows me to then utilize this. It will utilize this function when anybody goes to query off that table. So I created the predicate function, and now I'm going to set the policy to add the filter, right, on the patient's table, right? So I'm setting a security policy that says add this filter predicate over the patient's table, and it'll use this function that we just created. Now that that's done, I'm going to go and select from the table. Remember, I did a select before. I can't see anything.
Right.
Right, because it's secured down. So even though I'm a DBA,
right,
I now can't see any of the data
because they haven't given
because
you
I'm not defined in the roles table.
So that's important because while you need to execute and do things against the structure of the database and do all this, the data itself has highly sensitive information that they don't want you to have access to.
Yeah, I mean, before I joined Microsoft, I worked for a company where I was a DBA and I had to manage the HR database, right? If I wanted to, not that I was interested in looking at it, but if I wanted to, I could go in there and find out the salary of every employee in the place.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Because there was no restriction on me as a DBA, as the supervisor or systems administrator over the database, to restrict me from seeing that.
So in terms of privacy and compliance, this is
absolutely key.
Pretty key.
Right?
All right, cool.
So now I'm going to execute this as Corey R. Corey R is an administrator operator. Corey does not have any access to that information. I'm going to turn that off. We don't need to see. The results are that Corey has no access to any of that information. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm also going to execute this same same query as Florence Nightingale.
Right.
Florence, right? If I look at her, you can see here Florence is got access to the third wing. That means that the only thing I should see are patients in the third wing.
Yep.
Right? And I can do that the same thing here, right? You'll notice here that Moya Allen has access to wing 1, 2, and 3, but they are during different times. So depending on when the patient is there, will determine whether I have access to that patient or not.
Okay.
So I'm going to execute this one, and you'll see that I have access to 4 patients, right? And the only reason why I have access to those patients is because they fit into the time window on when she was actually assigned to that floor, that wing. And then the last one is Greg H.
Greg H.
And he's got access to the wing 2, which gives me access to 2 patients, right?
Awesome.
Now, I'm going to extend this one last time, and what I'm going to do is expand on the predicate function,
mm-hmm.
which is going to say where the nurse is equal to one and is a member or doctor and wing and so forth. But I'm also adding won't apply to administrator members, right? So what we're doing is we're actually overriding the capability that would block Corey from seeing certain data.
Okay.
And I'm going to re-alter and reapply that policy. And now if I go in here and I execute this, you notice I have no use or no access to it as a DBA. But because Corey is a administrator, Corey will have access to all seven patients.
Gotcha.
But Florence should only have still access to two patients.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how we can block out specific individuals and allow other individuals to have access to the data, right? So that's role level security. The last two I want to show you is live query statistics. Customers have asked for this, and when you're running an execution, you're looking at a query, and a query is running a long time, you'd really like to know what was going on. So now, I'm going to turn on, and you'll see I'm hovering over this thing called Include Live Query Statistics. And by doing that, I'm going to execute this SQL query. That SQL query is actually going to join many tables together and should provide me some interesting information. As you can see in the bottom here, and I'm going to scroll this up, as this executes, and it ran quick, I should see the live statistics as the query is running. As the query executes, the query so you can see here, let's run this again.
No, I see the little icon.
See, now you can see that the execution is happening.
Gotcha.
And the query,
live.
You can see, hover over as the execution occurs to see the data moving, and you can see the dots indicating that there's a merge join going on here, another merge join, compute scaler,
mm-hmm.
a nested loop. So I can actually see the execution of the query
right.
and where the time is being spent while the query is executing. Right? So it gives me a little more information as to where in this whole line of execution where the time is being spent. And we'll let that continue to run. What I'm going to do is I'm going to actually go in here and create. So this is the query store demo. We're adding this new thing called the query store, which allows me to take a look at the query plans that are created on queries as they execute. So over time, I can take a look to see why a query that was always running at 30 seconds
mm-hmm.
is now running for several minutes. No code has changed on the database, but a query plan has been changed because something occurred.
Right.
Statistics have changed, so
yep.
forth. But I know that the statistics that I had originally had on the query were the right statistics. Why am I getting different statistics now, or is different plans? So the way I would do it is I'm going to utilize a database over on the side here called the Query Store Demo. You'll see down here that there is this new item that's entered into underneath the Query Store Demo, which is called the Query Store. Not every database, and I'll open up one of these, you can see the AdventureWorks Data Warehouse 2016 doesn't have that Query Store item. And that's because I have to turn it on. So I'm going to create this database called ZMyTest, just so that we can see.
Now, is ZMyTest supposed to be like CMyTest?
CMyTest, but it goes down to the bottom, so it's easy to find there when I'm trying to do a refresh and say, gotcha. Oh, there it is right there at the bottom, right? Now, you'll notice here, I do not have the query store item in the bottom in the database. But by running this alter statement, which is telling me to set the query store on, and the interval length is 1 minute, this allows me to now set up capturing of query statistics. And if I refresh this, go down, and now we can see that the query store is here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You do have to turn this on for whatever databases that you're going to want to use. So in this demo, I'm going to use the query store demo database. And now I'm going to go in here, and I'm going to show you a couple of examples. I did mention that this information is available by looking at some tables that we store about the queries that are running or have run. You can notice here that I have these queries, and here's the query text, and it's telling me the plan ID that it's using and so forth. So I can take a look at the last n number of queries that were executed on the database. The second one is going to give me a count of executions for each of the queries. Now, this is great. And obviously, having this information is easy to get access to. But what if I want to take a look at the data graphically? I can come into the query store and say, show me the top resources consumed. Now I'm looking at, here are the query. This is the query. You can see it's executed twice. It only has one plan, right? And as I look at these, I can hover over and take a look at what the different queries are.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows me to see various different queries. So the query that I'm looking at here shows me that I've actually got two query plans for the same query. What I want is when that query executes from now on, I want it to actually utilize this query. So if I change query plans, I can take a look at what the query plan looks like. And what I want to do is I want to force a query plan. I can force query plan on a specific application. So each one going through and allowing. So I'm going to kick off this process.
And just as a quick time check, we've got like 7 minutes, and then we have a hard stop.
And I'm on my last demo.
Last demo. Look at that thing running.
So this is just executing. That was rapid fire. Executing. I'm gonna refresh this. I'd say refresh. And as we take a look here, you can see that I'm able to take a look at the various different queries that are executing. I can see if there's any queries that are running more than one query plan. I can take a look at logical reads. I can take a look at duration. I could take a look at memory consumption, right? Now here's one. This says it has two plans, a plan 4 and a plan 7. Plan 7's not even showing up here. Actually, it's plan 4 that's showing, 7 that's showing up. Plan 4 is not. So if I want to force a query plan, right, I can force the query plan and say force this plan 7 for query 4, and I say yes. So now on, whenever that query comes in, it's going to utilize that plan and will take the faster plan every time it executes.
Oh, nice.
So the query store allows me to go in and take a look at query plans that have changed. Look at the query plans as to why they might have changed. I can actually compare plans. If I get a multiple of plans up here,
yep.
I can tell it to compare the plans and show me the plans that, you know, what's the difference between the plans, and I can then force a plan if I want to. With that, that's all the time we have. That's all the demos we have.
Why don't you come on back here, Steve? So if people want to learn more about SQL 20, look at those. Look at this.
That thing's still running.
Fire and rapid fire. What should people be doing to get caught up, to learn more, to get their hands on?
So there's two things. One is obviously they can go into MSDN and take a look at the books online. There are virtual tutorials or virtual labs
that we have
that are
online.
For free.
Very
that
nice.
You can go in and try out in memory. You can try out always on availability.
Yep.
You can try out Query Store, right?
Very
data,
nice.
Dynamic data masking.
Yep.
So go to the virtual labs under the resources off the SQL Server page. You'll be able to find under resources virtual labs.
So if they don't know where to go, they can just go ahead and bing, Microsoft SQL Server, get to the SQL Server
virtual
page.
Virtual lab.
And then off that, there's links to the virtual labs.
That's
very
correct.
Cool. And go online, check out the books. Anything, they got stuff in TechNet?
TechNet's got stuff on there. There's blogs out there. Each one of the SQL development teams are actually have their own blog. You know, you can look under MSDN blogs. They're all out there talking about
Very
the
nice.
New features. And obviously,
and can people get their hands on this stuff now?
They
too?
Can. So we're no longer at a CTP version.
A CTP?
We are now, yep.
Customer.
Come on. Customer.
Not tap.
So it is almost like a tap. It's actually capability for customers to try.
What is CTP? Do you know what it stands for? I do not.
Yeah.
Customer.
Program.
Something program.
Yeah, something program.
Customer.
Hey, there, you stumped me.
Telltale program.
But the RC0 is now released. For
release candidate zero.
Release candidate zero.
The first of our release candidates.
Right.
So people can start playing, just like you were doing, get their hands on it, start playing around, check out the TechNet articles, check out on MSDN the books that are already available, as well as off the SQL Server page, you can go ahead and get links to the virtual labs.
That's correct. And then if they have any questions, give us... You know,
let us
send
know.
Send us queries.
Yeah, send us queries. And what we can do is also, Bill's done this in the past. We can certainly, through our this month end, we can do stuff out of band. We can create on-demand videos showing and highlighting different pieces for whatever you have questions around.
And the last place to get some of these resources or learn your local SQL and BI user groups.
User groups. And wait a minute, one last thing. Call to action. That's not a call to action. That's just a bing. Call to action. Master Chief's call to action is, if you want to get in depth on SQL 2016 and all the BI capabilities and data capabilities, contact your rep to schedule an appointment with your Microsoft Technology Center, MTC, where you can come in to meet folks like Bill and other architects around the world.
And help you look at your existing applications and see how we can help
those
you.
Those Oracle guys that were wondering, how
absolutely.
Can I move it? Yeah, absolutely. So let us know. With that, hold on one second, Stephen. We have just to announce for our next one. So just so you know, next Monday, Midday Cafe, there is none. It is a week off on Midday Cafe. I will be with the family on vacation. It's my daughter's spring break. Her last spring break for high school.
Where are you going?
We're going to New York City.
Oh, I thought you
New
going
York
down to Florida.
City.
I thought you were going down to Florida or down to the Outer Banks to swim with the sharks.
We should do a swim with the sharks. but we're not. So the next one will actually be, if I pull up, let's see. That date is, what are we at? We're at January, February, March.
We're at
I have
March
to do the
21st.
Fingers.
So you got to look for the next one, which will be in April.
So we're talking 24th or 21st right now. So here we go.
Oh.
The next one is 4-4.
4-4.
Yes, 4-4, and it is Midday Cafe, What's New with Delve, where we're actually going to have, I have special guests from corporate that are going to be showing. Woo. Yeah. I actually have, let's see, special guest. Yeah, senior program manager for Delve is going to be on. So
more analytics.
Analytics, yes. It's all
we
about
We love
it.
The data.
Love it, love it, love it. And I have a couple of new posts that we're going to post up for some additional events. So stay tuned. With that, we want to thank you from Midday Cafe. Myself, Mike Giannotti, with producer Steve. You want to say goodbye?
Have a good week, everyone.
And Mr. Emmer?
Goodbye, Bill.
Goodbye, Bill. And so we want to thank you for tuning in. Have a great day. Take care. And as always, ciao.